Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Save big money at Menards. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. We have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Get free estimates fast using our easy do-it-yourself landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape products at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit JDPower.com for details and Menards.com for deals.
American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Save big money at Menards. Never get locked out from lost keys again. Menards carries a huge selection of electronic lock sets. Get a TrueBolt touchscreen deadbolt that features one-touch locking and 50 programmable user codes. Available in matte black or satin nickel finishes on sale now through September 8th at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit JDPower.com. For details and Menards.com for deals. Save big money at
Menards. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, June 3rd, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the biggest box office stories from this past weekend. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone, how's it going?
All right, Ryan, it is once again time for you and I to chronicle the slow dissolution of the movie industry in real time. So let's get into it. What happened at the box office this past weekend?
I'm joking
a little bit, but like kind of not really. So
no, it's bad. I'm trying not to like sound the alarm bell needlessly, but like quite literally, we had one of the worst weekends arguably that we've had in 25 years, particularly for the summer movie season. So the big picture here is that the top 10 at the box office barely cracked 60 million this week, which means it is the last time that happened in a May or June week, was way back in mid-May of 1999, the weekend before The Phantom Menace came out, when the top 10 movies at the box office collectively made $59 million. And now, mind you, that was 25 years ago. If you adjust that for inflation, that's about $111 million in today's dollars. Now, that still wouldn't be great, but it's a heck of a lot better than what we're staring down right now.
Yeah.
That's first off. Like, just to let you know how bad this is, it's that bad. And the big difference there is that you had The Phantom Menace coming out the following weekend. Like, you had one of the biggest movies of all time opening the following weekend. We don't have that right now. We have Bad Boys Ride or Die coming out. That looks to do well, but not enough to make up for what's been going on. So that starters for like the big picture. So me and Ben are trying not to be like alarmist and be like sort of creating like a big fancy headline just for the sake of it. But it is bad. Like, I want to make that clear. Like, we're not just trying to be salacious here. So the Garfield movie, the somewhat interesting thing that happened is that the Garfield movie actually ended up taking the number one spot for the weekend. As you recall, last weekend, Garfield and Furiosa opened and Furiosa took the top spot. Well, Furiosa tumbled in its second weekend, dropped 59%, fell to number three with 10.7 million. Garfield had held very well, as these family movies tend to do, dropped just a little less than 42%, $14 million. And John Krasinski's If, to that same point, held really well again in its third weekend, dropped just 33%, and that made $10.8 million. So that even edged out Furiosa in its second weekend.
That's such a bummer for George Miller. It's such a bummer for Furiosa. I mean, the movie is like so good and interesting, and there's some incredible action in it. It's just like people are just not interested in watching this movie, which is just really depressing to me. But yeah.
Yeah, I will say this, having seen it now, it is far less overtly crowd-pleasing than Fury Road. And people are going to get mad at me for saying that, but I And we talked about this before. Fury Road itself was a modest hit theatrically. It was sort of the movie's reputation and its kind of unexpected award season run that made it like what it is. I don't know if Furiosa sort of gets to that same level, but it is still wildly disappointing. It is a very good movie, and it definitely deserved better than this. And it's not like it has a lot of direct competition. Like, that would be the thing. If it somehow got buried by, like, a behemoth movie, you could make some argument. But there's nothing standing in its way other than just audience disinterest, which is the really depressing part. That's the part where, like, the biggest thing from this summer so far to me is movies like The Fall Guy and Furiosa that have a lot of support and nothing is standing in their way, and yet they still can't get over the hip.
I understand it, like, the idea of like, oh, a prequel, I don't really care about prequels, we know where the story is going. Like, I understand it more for Furiosa, like why that movie is not interesting audiences, than I do, frankly, for The Fall Guy, which seems like such a to use an industry term, like a four quadrant home run, basically. And it just, like, people were waiting for it to come to home video. So we don't need to rehash all that again.
But, no, we don't. But that to me is the emerging. If there's a lasting concern that I'm going to have even heading into 2025, it's that, which is like, even movies people seemingly said they want, movies that seem to deliver the goods on some level, like the fact that Furiosa won't even crack 300 million worldwide, like that is really depressing. That's rough. And yeah, The Fall Guy, look, we don't need to go over that again. But yeah, so that's sort of the everlasting lesson here.
Noting real quick, Ryan, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Go right on ahead.
You mentioned this in one of your box office pieces, but I think it's just worth us like taking a second and pointing out, I mean, you already mentioned this, but the number one movie domestically made $14 million. And we're like in the summer movie season right now.
We're in June. We're in the first weekend of June. Like, this should not be happening.
Yeah. You know, like, that's a wild thing for us to like wrap our heads around, you know, in eras where like we grew up and movies were making, I mean, there's a range, obviously, but 14 million for the number one movie is just really, it's quite something. So.
Yeah. And again, it's like, there are movies out there right now that like nothing is standing in their way. Like, if audiences were interested, there's, you know, cause I mean, if we want to compare this to the same weekend last year, the June 2nd to June 4th stretch last year, we had Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse open to $120 million. Which was like way more than Into the Spider-Verse made. And here we were like shouting from the roofs how optimistically cool that was. Mm-hmm. That like a good movie to a great movie made a lot more money. Like, that was neat. And even then, like The Little Mermaid had held over. That made $41.3 million in its second weekend. You know, so you had a lot of stuff to be optimistic about this same weekend last year. And we're just not in the same boat. It's just really not. So I guess that's to start. I don't know if you want to go over some of the reasons to maybe be a little optimistic amongst the horribleness, but you know.
Yeah, I think we should. What kind of reasons do you have for maybe a sliver of hope in this chaos?
Yeah, so If, which I mentioned briefly, is giving me hope. The fact that movie, even with Garfield taking the number one spot, dropped 33% in its third weekend. That A cinema score for that movie. Now, I know critics were a bit mixed on it, but people are showing up. It is, you know, the international grosses are going to leave something to be desired, I think. But it's now assured to cross 100 million domestic. And, you know, that's pretty good for an original family friendly movie. And if you know, it opens in Japan later this month, I think if it can sort of put something together here, you know, that this, I don't want to say it's going to go so far as to pull like an Elemental where it makes almost 500 million worldwide, but I think it could pull an Elemental in the sense that it'll leg out well beyond what maybe it should have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that is good to me. Like, I like to see that. My beloved Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes crossed 300 million worldwide. It's now at 337 globally. It is kind of all but assured to make at least like 400, if not close to it. Which would probably give Disney the confidence to go forward with the next installment, I would believe. So that's really good news, even without like a gigantic, you know, gross in China. So that's like really encouraging to me. And then we had In a Violent Nature open up. I believe you and BJ did a, and Chris did a episode about that last week, no?
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
Yeah. And yeah, so that did well for IFC, sort of like Late Night with the Devil earlier this year. It made $2.1 million on just over 1,400 screens. Had a nice, you know, almost $1,500 per screen average. That's nice for an unrated super violent horror movie with a very minimal marketing campaign. That already has a streaming output deal with Shudder, so like it's kind of already like the money's already sort of accounted for in a lot of ways. It's just like the theatrical run is sort of a icing on the cake in this situation, and those theaters were happy to have that money. To that same point, I don't know how to say this. It's Haikyuu: The Dumpster Battle. I might be butchering that, but that's Crunchyroll's latest anime. That made $3.5 million on just over 1,100 screens. So the per screen average there was north of $3,100, which for those theaters, that's great. You know, the theaters that had that movie, like that's good news. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's good. You know, again, that's not helping the fact that we only had $60 million worth of top 10 box office, but you know, those screens were benefited by those particular entries. Ezra bombed badly. That's Robert De Niro's new one from Bleecker Street. That made less than $1,000 per screen average, $1.1 million. Summer Camp really bombed. That was a new one by Roadside. That was just barely over $1 million on 1,700, almost 1,800 screens. So that made less than 600 per screen. So that was really bad. Yeah. So, you know, those were a couple of other rough ones. But when you have those are your new movies on a given weekend in summer, what do you expect?
Yeah. I mean, like I knew what Summer Camp was only because I got a press release about it. But, you know, otherwise I would never have any clue what that is. And even like, you know, reading other movie websites and stuff like that, you know, it was just a movie that basically was DOA because it was so tiny that it just had no chance. So,
well, and also like, I want to point out that like, it's not like some, you know, wonderful piece of art is being lost here. That movie has a 9% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, like, I don't want to, well, like, I don't want to like, you know, I haven't seen it, so I'm not trying to, but I'm just saying it's not like, this isn't like when Booksmart bombed a handful of years ago and all of us were like, what the hell? You know, like it's a little different. But yeah, so I don't know. It's certainly a mixed bag. You know, July looks a little better than June. Inside Out 2 early tracking looks good. So that's, you know, there's hope there. But yeah, for right now, this is rough to look at.
All right. Well, maybe next weekend things will turn, or next Monday, things will sound a little bit better because we'll be coming off of Bad Boys Ride or Die. And given how successful that previous one was, it seems like, you know, people are interested in seeing Will Smith and Martin Lawrence come back and play those characters again and sort of run the hits one more time, at least. So I think I saw them say, like, we might even have one more in us, you know, beyond that or something. So
yeah, they said it's because they were asked about, like, you know, maybe passing the torch to it. And I think they were like, no, I think we got one more, you know, one more in us or whatever. And, you know, this one is tracking in a similar-ish range to Bad Boys for Life in 2020. It's tracking a little below, but worth remembering is that Bad Boys for Life sort of way outperformed its tracking. Like that movie blew away tracking numbers. So like, you know, that's worth taking into account when like looking at Ride or Die tracking a little below, is that like it's tracking in a similar range of what the original was actually tracking to do, which would have been good. So I think that for Sony and for that franchise individually, that'll be good. And it'll definitely be a lot better than a $14 million opening. But you know, again, we're still without like $100 million openers, so we're going to be, you know, still mild for June. But yeah, definitely a little more optimism next week, I hope.
Okay. All right. So I've gotten away from this. I apologize to the listeners who requested this. Some people wrote in and asked, like, hey, when you guys talk about box office, can you just run down the top 10 on every one of these box office episodes that you do? And I've forgotten about that. So let's do that now, Ryan. Can you run through the top 10 of the domestic box office for me?
Oh, for sure. So, and what I'll start doing to Ben's email at the beginning of the episodes on Mondays, guys, I'll start, you know, going down so we can do that at the beginning. But for this week, let's go. So the Garfield movie, top number one with $14 million. If at number two with $10.8 million. Furiosa at number 3 with $10.75 million. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes at number 4 with $8.8 million. The Fall Guy at number 5 with $4.2 million. The Strangers Chapter 1 hanging around at number 6 with $3.6 million. Haikyuu the Dumpster Battle with $3.5 million at number 7. And A Violent Nature with $2.1 million at number 8. Ezra at number 9 with $1.1 million. And Sight with $1 million, rounding out the top 10.
All right, let's take a break. And then when we come back, I have a listener email that I would love to get into with you, Ryan.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big money at Menards. Never get locked out from lost keys again. Menards carries a huge selection of electronic lock sets. Get a TrueBolt touchscreen deadbolt that features one-touch locking and 50 programmable user codes. Available in matte black or satin nickel finishes on sale now through September 8th at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
Save big money at
Save big money at Menards. Never get locked out from lost keys again. Menards carries a huge selection of electronic lock sets. Get a TrueBolt touchscreen deadbolt that features one-touch locking and 50 programmable user codes. Available in matte black or satin nickel finishes on sale now through September 8th at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, here we go. Belinda wrote in, "You are probably not old enough to remember, but there used to be second-run houses in Chicago. Movies would stay in the theater for maybe a month or more, and then they would go to second-run houses where the prices were deeply discounted. Now it seems the studios pull movies just a few weeks before they go to streaming, but some movies I still want to see on a movie screen. Do you think that something like second-run theaters have a chance of returning, especially for people who might have been delayed from seeing the movie in the first 3 or 4 weeks of its release, could be great for families?" So it sounds like Belinda knows that those theaters are not around anymore. I did like some cursory Googling just to see if there was any surprise second run theater near me that I had no idea about. And it seems like that entire business model really has just been completely wiped out, probably because of streaming. But I was curious what you thought about this question, Ryan.
Can I ask you first before we actually answer the question, do you have any experience with, like, did you grow up going to these types of theaters?
I did a little bit. There was a big, like a 24 screen theater that opened near me when I was growing up, probably when I was about 10 years old or something like that. And so that one like took over. But before that, anytime we would go to the movies, it would be at a really small sort of second run theater that was like a little more off the beaten path. And the only other second run, and you know, I did that from whatever age 5 to 10 or something, but then the only other second run theater experience I think that I've had is when I was in LA, living in Los Angeles in 2012, when Prometheus came out, there was a second run theater there where my wife and I took our roommate and we paid, I think it was $1 each to see our second viewing of Prometheus. And the projection in that theater was so bad that when the title came up on the screen, all we could see was Rometheus. Like the P was completely cut
off.
And I was like, well, you get what you pay for, I guess. It was a dollar. So, you know, that was the most recent experience that I had there. But what about you?
So I grew up, I grew up very lower middle class poor. And me and my mom love going to the movies, but like going sometimes was challenging financially. So there was that Superstition Springs Mall in Mesa, Arizona. There was, I believe it was called Picture Show, It was this second run theater like she's talking about, and it was, yeah, like $1, I believe, to go see $1. And then like some days they had like dollar hot dogs or whatever. And like, so we could, that was how we went to the movies most of the time. And yeah, no, was it like a fancy movie theater? God, no. But like, I have such wonderful, because that to me was like this haven where, like, you know, we didn't have a lot of, you know, fancy stuff like growing up. So it's like, that was like my favorite thing to go do. And that made it possible. Like sometimes me and my friends would get dropped off at the mall and we would go catch like a cheap movie. And like, you know, so that was really like a thing that I enjoyed a lot. And I think it is something that, you know, I think we did lose something when that business model died. And my belief is that, because there was even one when I first moved to Austin 7 years ago, there was one right near me where I was first staying when I moved here. But I think even they closed down now. So I think that what happened was that was a, that model was dying because of streaming. And then I think the pandemic killed whatever was left. Like if there was, because I think there were some left now. Let's get into the question here, because I have a fondness for these theaters, and I think they are, they or were important. What have we been talking about almost every single Monday this entire year? The box office is in bad shape. Like, people are not going to the movies just as a habit anymore. These second run theaters were really sort of existing on the idea that people went to movies as just a regular ass habit. So if that doesn't exist anymore, this business model completely falls apart. Because yeah, by the time these movies are, would get to a second run house, they would be on streaming. They would be out in other ways. So yeah, it'd be tough to justify. I don't know how you could sort of put that together, because even when like DVD and Blu-ray were a bigger thing, maybe someone didn't want to go buy a Blu-ray. Maybe someone didn't want to go. So you could still justify that. Now, though, click of a button on streaming, it's tough to justify that model. So I think, like, as those existed, I just don't think there's a way for them to come back within, like, the business as it exists. And that's got a lot to do. You'll go ahead, Ben. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I agree. I like, conceptually, I love the idea of a second run theater existing and, like, thriving in, you know, every community in the country. It just seems like such a cool thing. And like, you know, you're always talking about studios leaving money on the table, and like, you know, if there's a way to, even though they're available on streaming or available on PVOD, paid VOD, or whatever, like maybe there could be a way to, for the theaters to say, hey, you know, this movie actually came out 4 or 5 months ago, let's immediately put it back in theaters, but put it back in these, you know, low cost theaters or whatever. Conceptually, all of that makes sense to me. It's just when you get down into the nuts and bolts of actually like running that as a business, you know, the person who owns and operates that theater, the exhibitors on that side of it, it just doesn't, I don't know if there's enough interest from people to go out in a group setting like that and experience these things, like you said, when you could just click a button on your couch and like, that's it. So
yeah, there would be none there, but I will say, like, if there was such a thing, and I, like, so there's been some talk about like the studios maybe purchasing theaters at this point, like, and maybe getting into that. I'll tell you what would build up a ton of goodwill, as if, like, you know, let's say Disney or Netflix bought like a chain of theaters around the country or something. And what part of their business model was, these are not like meant to be ticket sale revenue drivers for us. So we're programming them, and like the tickets are like $2, and they're banking on like offsetting that with concessions. But the idea is like, it's a good faith builder, where it's like the studios are almost investing in the habit of movie going that way, where they sort of advertise that, like, cool, you want to see a cheap movie, we got you, you know, like, and even if it's not like brand new movies, it's like stuff that you may have missed. Maybe you get like a short engagement of like a Netflix movie that is coming out or whatever. And you can go to these theaters that are like, it's cheap tickets. So there you have a bigger business invested, where they're not necessarily relying on that to purely profit, but like it's an investment in the habit of movie going, and maybe like the business can sort of break even over enough time with concessions and whatever else. But I think that would be like one hell of a way to build goodwill, but that's about the only way that I can see it working. I think what sucks is that I feel like, so you're right, like from a community perspective, something is missing with that not being there. Because I think about like my family and that being like such an important way for us to see movies and like the experiences I had, and like my mom not realizing how good The Dark Knight was and me realizing she hadn't seen it yet and like panicking to see if it was still in theaters and realizing we could go to this dollar theater to make her see The Dark Knight. Like that was like really cool. And I remember that. And like, so yeah, there is like a community element there that I think we're missing for sure.
Yeah. I wonder if like, and again, I love the idea. I would be behind this. I just wonder if the studios would be like, would an investment like that, like the one you're talking about, be then doubling down on training people to just not see things in their original run and wait until they come to the cheaper theaters, basically, because like, you know, that's what everybody's so scared of right now, rightly so, as we've seen with these big movies. So I wish the studios would do something like that. I just don't know if they actually would pull the trigger on it, because we're talking about building habits. Like maybe it would actually build the wrong habit for them.
Well, here would be my counter argument to that, is that like, all right, let's say in a perfect world this did happen. All right, maybe you're right. Some people decide to wait to go to the cheaper film, but I would argue those are probably the same people that are right now saying, I'll just wait to watch it at home. So if they went to the movies at all to go see it instead of waiting at home, I would wager that that is a positive, even if it's a small positive as far as the overall box office goes. I would second that by saying if those experiences went well, if like Netflix, Amazon, Disney, whoever owned those theaters was keeping them up. And let's be honest, if it was Disney, the way Disney runs a ship, those are going to be nice theaters. They're not going to run a shitty situation. So that, I think optimistically, would in turn, people would be like, oh, hey, I'm going to the movies again. I'm kind of enjoying this. Yeah, maybe whatever the next thing I'm excited about, I will actually go to like pay a little bit more and go to a first run theater rather than like. So I think that that second run theater thing could potentially be go the other way as opposed to what you're saying, where I think it'd be less likely that the moviegoers that still go now regularly are going to turn their back on seeing their excitement and wait that long to go to a second run house. I think it'd be more likely that you'd get the VOD people back with a cheaper offering. That would be my thing. So,
well, yeah, maybe, I don't know, with the, yeah, you're talking about like, I think it's called the Paramount consent decrees, which were overturned, within the past few years. So yeah, there's been a lot of rumblings about whether or not studios are actually going to be able to, that they can now legally buy movie theater chains. It's just a matter of whether or not they actually want to make that investment. So, we'll have to see if that comes to fruition, but I think the best bet for people right now is to try to see if there's a repertory theater in your area that shows older movies.
So if you live in Austin, for example, the Paramount Theater out here every summer, they just started it. They do the summer movie series out here, and it's all classics that you would have never get to see on the big screen in the most beautiful theater you could hope to see them in. And tickets are like $11. Like they showed Star Wars: A New Hope last week, you know, like, and just like, you know, they have tons of stuff throughout the whole, like the Evil Dead 2 and then like a bunch of Hitchcock movies and like all these amazing things you could, like I saw Heat there last year, which was awesome. Wow. You know, for like very little money. And yeah, so like that, you know, there are some of these bigger cities do have stuff like that. You just have to seek it out.
I would say for people who don't live in Austin, New York, LA, you know, like what are typically known as movie cities, keep an eye out for Fathom Events. They have this series that brings some older movies to multiplexes around the country, and it seems to be going pretty well for them. I read that last year they set a new record for that program that they have by making something like over $20 million at the box office for the year across re-releases of The Birds and Enter the Dragon and The Big Lebowski and a few other things. An older episode of Slash Film Daily, I talked about seeing Casablanca on the big screen for the first time. That was last year, and that was just at my local AMC, and I had a great time with that. That was part of that Fathom Events program.
Yep, and I think Fathom doesn't have any control over the venues themselves, but I think Fathom does a good job of putting together programming. Like, I went a couple of weeks ago, they had like a Transformers 40th anniversary event for the original animated series, and what they did is they got like the original cast to re-record the original episode with like some newer cast members, and like they played the episode alongside the recording, which was really neat. And so like, you know, they do stuff like that, but then yeah, they do bring classic movies to theaters very regularly. And I think that also in that same vein, if you live, I think like West Coast ish area in Arizona, I grew up, there was a theater chain called Harkins. I think we talked a little bit about them last weekend because of our other listener email, and they do a classic movie series, and tickets for those are only like $5. And I remember one month years ago, they did like a bunch of James Bond movies in a month. So I went and saw like three James Bond movies for like $5 a piece, you know? And so like there are these local, more localized theater chains that do programming like that. You do just have to seek them out.
Yeah. I was looking up what Fathom has coming up for this year. They've already re-released The Wizard of Oz and Labyrinth and stuff like that. And then there are several things that are still coming up in case you're just hearing about this for the first time. South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut is coming back to theaters in June. The extended editions of Peter Jackson's original Lord of the Rings trilogy are all coming to theaters this month as well. The Neverending Story is coming back to theaters in July. Rear Window is coming in August. Blazing Saddles in September. Mean Girls in October, Fifth Element in November, and White Christmas in December. So, there's a pretty decent lineup. I'm kind of curious about seeing Rear Window on the big screen. I might try to check that out in August. I love that movie. So, there are some options out there. It's not exactly what Belinda's talking about with the second run, you know, like new release kind of thing. But at least, like, if you're into the idea of seeing older movies on the big screen, there are some options out there available, but check your local listings and all that. But all right, any other closing thoughts on any of this stuff, Ryan?
No, I just got really nostalgic about dollar theaters, and it's like a bit of a, it's like, damn. I think the only last thought I have is that like malls are kind of dying, and I think my memory is that a lot of those dollar theaters were kind of like the one I went to was attached to a mall, you know. So like I feel like there's probably an element of like, if like you sort of need the mall to support that business. And so I feel like that might be another reason why that probably can't exist now. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, we can dream about Disney and whoever, Apple, Amazon, buying, you know, just investing insane amounts of money into like really nice theaters for second run stuff. I don't know if it'll ever actually happen, but it's a nice dream. So thank you for writing in, Belinda. I appreciate that. All right. You can find more about all of these stories at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. That's bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Save big money at Menards. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. We have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Get free estimates fast using our easy do-it-yourself landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape products at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit JDPower.com for details and Menards.com for deals. Save big money at Menards. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. We have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Get free estimates fast using our easy do-it-yourself landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape products at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit JDPower.com for details and Menards.com for deals. Save.